Good morning, everyone. I'm so glad and honored to be here to speak to you all today about my research, which I did during the spring of the semester as a graduate assistant with one of my professors, Dr. Ricardo Izireta. So the title of my presentation is Prevalence of STI, HIV, and Factors Associated with STI Among Female Sexual Workers in Ecuador. So I have no relationships to disclose. Background. Worldwide, female sex workers constitute one of the most vulnerable populations for HIV and STI infection. As we know, this is due to the prevalence of high-risk sexual behaviors amongst them. So they're more likely to have unprotected sexual intercourse, they're more likely to have multiple sexual partners. And in fact, most studies have revealed that female sex workers have about 12 to 13 times higher odds of acquiring HIV infections than other women of reproductive age group who do not sell sex. In Ecuador, which is, you know, the country of interest, very few studies have been done examining the prevalence of STI and HIV, and very few studies have also looked at factors associated with these outcomes. So the objective of the study is to estimate the prevalence of HIV and STI among female sexual workers in the province in northwestern region of Ecuador, and also to examine the risk factors and factors associated with self-reported STI among female sex workers in the same province. So this study was conducted in 2010 in Ecuador, and snowballing sampling was used. So what happened was health workers were used to recruit participants. So these health workers or health promoters actually work with the Sex Workers Association. So health workers and peer educators that work with sex workers were used to recruit female sex workers to participate in this study. I didn't mention this earlier. So in Ecuador, sex work is legal. So once a female is 18 years of age and above, they can actually register with the Ministry of Health and be involved in sex work. So these participants were recruited using SEEDS. So they identified health promoters and peer educators from different regions across the province. So these individuals were used to identify sex workers. So they have two different groups of sex workers. They have sex workers that are registered with the Ministry of Health, and they have sex workers that are not registered. So they're referred to as the hard-to-reach sex workers. So they're not registered because they do not see themselves as sex workers. So they do it part-time, probably, you know, they just go to the park, to the beach, and they get their clients. So they're not registered. They don't see themselves as sex workers. So what was done in this study is, you know, they used peer educators, health promoters to identify these people. So we started by recruiting six sex workers from across these two categories of people. So we call them SEEDS. So those SEEDS were interviewed. They helped recruit other people, so they were given three vouchers to recruit three more people each. So the study continued that way until we were able to recruit our sample size of 270, which was based on, you know, an estimation. We thought that the prevalence of HIV in that province was going to be about 3.5, based on a study conducted in a neighboring province. So finally, we had this estimated sample size of 270. So to be in this study, women had to be greater than 18 years of age. That was part of the inclusion criteria. They had to report selling sex for money, occasionally or part-time, and they must be able to understand informed consent. The interview was administered by health promoters, and it was structured. Participants were asked to voluntarily give blood specimens for HIV and syphilis tests. So those that declined were referred to the Ministry of Health to go for voluntary counseling, and they were given free condoms. Those that declined to participate in the study were given free condoms. The study was approved by a registered IRB in Ecuador. So again, the main outcomes of the study is HIV and STI infection, and HIV and syphilis infection and self-reported STI within the past 3 months. So for HIV and syphilis infection, we actually collected blood samples and tested them. So for HIV test, ELISA test was done, and for those who tested positive, a confirmatory test was done using the Uni-Gold HIV rapid test. Those who tested negative were classified as being HIV negative. For syphilis test, the venereal disease research lab test was done as a screening test, and further confirmatory test was done using the TPPA. So those who tested positive on the confirmatory test were classified as having syphilis. For STI, it's self-reported, so they were asked within the past 3 months, did you ever have any STI? So those that said yes were classified as being, you know, STI, and those that said no were in the no STI group. The predictors were examined with several social demographic factors, knowledge and behaviors regarding HIV and STI transmission. So we did some descriptive statistics to understand the distribution of the social demographic characteristics and the prevalence of our outcomes of interest. We did bivariate analysis to examine the distribution of our predictors by the outcome, and logistic regression analysis to identify the independent predictors of self-reported STI in this population. So again, our sample size was 270, and mean age of participants was about 27, with age ranging from 18 to 54. So most of our participants were single, they had secondary school education, and about 50% of them reported that they had a stable partner apart from their regular client, and 16% of them actually reported that their first sex experience was forced, so they didn't do it willingly. Almost all of them reported using condom consistently, which, you know, I'm not sure if I agree with this completely, but they reported about 90% of them reported using condom consistently. However, out of those who reported having stable partners, only 9% of them reported using condom consistently with their stable partners. Knowledge of HIV infection was actually really high. So that was about 95%. Only about 80% of them reported knowing at least an infection that could transmit STI. The one thing I wanted to know about the knowledge of HIV transmission is they were just asked, do you know HIV can be transmitted? Yes or no. So there are further questions to assess whether they really knew about this transmission method. So for example, can HIV be transmitted through kissing? Can it be transmitted through IV drug use and all that? So looking at those individual questions, they didn't do really well. For some of the questions, probably only 50% of them could identify correctly the right transmission route, but they claimed that they knew, you know, transmission methods. And these are sex workers that you'd expect that they would have high level of knowledge about HIV and STIs. So results. Table 1 shows the prevalence of HIV, syphilis, and self-reported STI among these female sex workers in Ecuador. So HIV prevalence was about 0.7%, syphilis was about 3.3%, and over a quarter of them reported that they had STI within the last 3 months of the study. Table 2 shows results from a multivariable logistic regression, which we controlled for age, marital status, and education status. As you can see, I'm just reporting the adjusted odds ratio. So if you look at the first row, age at onset of sex work. So individuals, in comparison to individuals who started sex work at age below 18 years, those who started sex work at 18 years and above were about 73% less likely to have reported STI within the past 3 months. So starting sex work at age below 18 is actually a risk factor for STI in this population. Looking at marital status compared to those who were married, sex workers who were single or previously married had higher risk of reporting STI, so they were about 80% more likely to have reported STI within the past 3 months. Education seems to be a protective factor But it didn't reach level of significance. So those who had secondary or higher level of education were about 50% less likely to have reported STI. Knowledge of any transmission method, any infection transmitted by sex. So this is interesting because we'd expect that those who have knowledge, right, would be less likely to have STI. However, what we found is the reverse. So we found that those who claim that they don't know anything about any infection transmitted by sex actually had about 70% reduced odds of reporting STI. And the only explanation that we have so far for this is we suspect that those who have knowledge probably got the knowledge after they had the infection. So they had the infection, they had to go to the clinic, and when they got to the clinic for treatment, they were educated about, you know, infections that can be transmitted through sex. So that's the explanation we have for this. And of course, as we would expect, those who have sex with other people apart from their clients, like, have higher risk of reporting STI within the past 3 months. So those who have no other partners apart from their clients reported about 70% lower odds of reporting STI. And this is expected because most of the individuals who reported having stable partners actually do not even wear condoms with their stable partners. So what are the limitations of this study? The main outcome of interest find for HIV and syphilis, you know, we took blood samples and assessed that they truly have the infection. But for STI, it was self-reported, so it's possible that there was recall bias, or probably due to social desirability bias, some people did not report that they had STI. Or another factor is the use of condom, because those that interviewed them were actually health workers that work with them, you know, so they could have reported, yes, you know, we use our condoms consistently when they were not doing so. So that's an issue with the study. So if that happened at all, then most likely there would be issue with underreported STI or overreported condom use, right? So that's a potential for misclassification. And if they ever reported on the underreported STI, then that means, you know, our measure of association, if they reported correctly, would expect to find, you know, more association than we found. Then the strengths include the fact that we're able to recruit the hard-to-reach population, you know, who do not identify as sex workers and who truly are involved in selling sex to make a living. And we have recent estimates of the prevalence of HIV and STI in this province, because they never had any record of such. And we've been able to identify factors with STI in this population. So, conclusions. In this province of Ecuador, the prevalence of HIV is low, as well as the prevalence of syphilis, but the prevalence of self-reported STI was found to be high. So it's important, even though we had low prevalence of HIV, with the prevalence of syphilis and STI, and the low condom use among those that have stable partners, the risk of still being able to transmit HIV and other STI still remains high. So it's still important, even though we found low prevalence of HIV. So it's still important that we pursue public education and promotion of, you know, good sexual behaviors among female sex workers. We identified several risk factors for STI in this population, and most importantly is the age of onset of sex work. Like I said earlier, in Ecuador, it's illegal to start sex work before 18 years of age. But in this population, we found probably about 16% who started before 18 years of age. So I'm sure those people started illegally, probably by selling sex at the beach, at the park, and all that. And we identified that this group constitutes high-risk population. So in our study, we looked at several other outcomes like consistent condom use, HIV, and we found that consistently, you know, starting sex work at age below 18 years of age is a risk factor for HIV, is a risk factor for syphilis, is a risk factor for not wearing condom consistently. So that's really important. So we're able to identify subgroups at high risk for HIV. So those who have lower education, those who have stable partners, those who start sex early, below the legal age of onset of sex. So we think it's important that the legal age of onset of sex work is enforced in Ecuador, since it's been confirmed as a risk factor across, you know, all the outcomes we examined. So prevention strategies should target education programs for the high-risk populations that have been identified. Thank you. Yeah, I thought it was going to be 15 minutes. Yeah. Okay. So I want to acknowledge my co-authors. They're not here today, and most of them are in Ecuador. And I want to say a big thank you to the Student Honorary Award for Research and Practice that provided me with funds to come for the conference. So I thought we're going to get questions, you know, right after the presentation, but she said the questions are going to come when we're all done with our presentation. So thank you for listening.